from our last policy update, this group decided that they wanted to have a special call after the election to talk about any election results that may have implications in the world of after school. So one of the topics that we wanted to talk about was, you know, now that Prop 30 passed, you know, what does that mean? What could that mean for after school as well as other, you know, results from the elections that could potentially impact after school?
This is Jessica, and I agree that there's a lot of experts on the line who probably have as much, if not more, information. But just in regards to breaking up how we speak about it, I think there's the federal election, obviously, if we want to focus on the state, both the propositions, the budget projections, as well as local initiatives that pass. That's kind of how I've organized my information, but I'd be curious what folks on the call want to focus on.
The only other thing that I'd add under state is kind of administrative policy updates from the after-school division.
Well, I think last time on the policy call, we covered sequestration and what that means. And I think most folks following the news generally are hearing a lot about the fiscal cliff. I think as it relates, so there's no changes based on our last call, only to remind folks that if sequestration goes through, that could mean a $9.7 million reduction in 21st century funds to California, and which would not hit until 2013-2014 based on what I've heard from the field. And I'm not sure if anyone has anything else other than that. I think we all know about the presidential election and that there weren't huge changes in the makeup of Congress. And from what we've heard from our partners is that there's not a lot of education policy shifts at the federal level. So a lot of folks are speculating that it will be a lot of the policy changes will continue to happen through waivers, race to the top, other administrative changes rather than through Congress, because most folks don't think ESCA will be reauthorized anytime soon, at least based on the way things are looking right now. So I'm not sure if people have any comments on that. Those were our highlights.
So this is Mary Jo. I think the only, it's just an addition that hit to the 21st century would actually not hit, it would take place in the 14 budget, which starts October 1st of 13. Which would be cohort 9, not the cohort 8 that people are applying for right now.
Now? Great.
Is my understanding.
That's an important distinction. I'm writing that down. Okay, great. Well, like I said, I think that's important to distinguish since folks are working really hard on getting those applications in right now.
Right.
And then in regards to the state, I think – obviously, there was a slew of propositions, Proposition 30 being the one that many education folks were tracking the most. And now we all know that these trigger cuts that we talked about last time won't go into effect. Particularly, I think folks were focused on the cut to the school year and that impact that would have on out-of-school time, both summer programs as well as during the school year. And that generally speaking, most folks know there's not any new money immediately with the passage of Prop 30. Rather, school districts are able, or the state is paying back debt owed to school districts. So they're just in less debt than they were, generally speaking, though each district varies. And that right now districts won't see really increased revenues until I think it's 2014. So I don't know if folks have, and Mary Jo, you have a lot of experience with various districts. I mean, for the largest urban districts, what we are hearing, it's just less debt than before or less layoffs or not hurt as bad. But some people have also said in other policy discussions that some school boards took action as if Prop 30 was not going to pass, so that they might have not new money, but more money than they had acted upon. So I'm not sure if you have more experience in that.
Yeah, Jessica, and what I am seeing is that districts who chose to do a very austere budget starting with this fiscal year, so starting July 1st of 12, and their budget was based that Prop 30 would not pass, have now restored some of the services that they had cut, i.e., they have less furlough days, and they have lengthened the and as a result, the school calendar has lengthened, and for staff who are not classroom staff but can be involved in many categorical programs, they have put them on to a full-time schedule. Most of those people used to work 12 months, and they have been cut to a 10-month schedule. So I'm seeing the districts who took those actions now have restored it back to, quote, pre-Prop 30 threats, but definitely not anything new. And that has actually created some interesting challenges for programs that had over-served students earlier in September and October because they thought 30 wouldn't pass, and now they've had 2 or 3 weeks added on to their academic year.
Oh, yeah.
So now they're trying to figure out how we're going to serve the kids during that. So, and so about half, and it was the larger districts that tended to take that action, and the smaller districts either had reserves or chose, had it kind of a plan B, but chose not to put it into effect until they saw what the results were of the cutbacks.
That's good to know. And I think definitely if any of us come across, I'm sure in the coming weeks people are doing a lot of analyses at a district-to-district level since there's so much variation. So if anyone comes across a resource that kind of breaks some of that out in a more detailed way, I'm assuming some larger education research think tanks will be doing that. I think it would be interesting for the groups at large since it varies so much on how they how the district's budgeted and what Prop 30 will mean to each school district. Up until, what is it, 2018, 2019, when it will go away.
Steve, with I guess a question maybe for Mary Jo, but others that are close to districts, as I know people are still absorbing the impact of this, but in the conversations, is it mainly around if revenues are there beyond, you know, the current program levels? Is it a conversation about just adding back what was taken away, or is somebody saying this is an opportunity to do business differently?
Steve, I can tell you I don't think, at least the districts that I have talked to and or seen what they're taking, is the conversation about how to do things differently has not yet started.
And but do you think there's a potential, or would people say, look, we cut so much, we gotta build back before we even think about a redesign of education with these new resources?
I would say that really depends on the leadership within the district.
Okay. All districts are local. Yeah,
and,
okay.
And also, I would say the other piece that impacts that is how far along in implementing Common Core or having a plan to implement the Common Core standards the district is also impacts that thinking.
Okay, so that's likely to be this. Are you saying that's kind of the centerpiece of?
That's the panic right now.
Okay.
That's definitely the centerpiece.
Of any sort of.
Assessments start to change, in 14-15.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think people are, the panic is not only rolling it out, but all the assessments are then technology-based, and districts are, like, looking and saying, we don't have that technology to do that. So if there's any extra money, that's where I think it's going to be dumped.
Okay. Thanks.
And there is also, I just want to share, there is going to be a webinar, a no-cost webinar, on how Proposition 30 may impact, the passage of it may impact the out-of-school time programs and exploring what new opportunities will be created. So that is being put on by ASAP Connect on December the 12th from 10 until noon.
Well, one other thing in addition to other things that happened was there was a lot of new elected senators and assembly members. So that's important for the policy committee to think moving forward in regards to leadership. The leadership in the Senate and Assembly didn't change. There are a lot of new members, and that's a huge thing was that the Democrats are now a supermajority in both the Senate and Assembly, which has a variety of implications in regards to passing tax measures, changing local, the ability to pass taxes locally, constitutional amendments, vetoes, which could have an array of policy implications for the education and out-of-school time fields. One note on the supermajority, which I'm sure many folks might have read, is due to some shifts that happened between the state legislature winning seats in Congress, there's also the supermajority might be delayed until up to next summer because there's going to have to be some special elections. So from what I've heard in Sacramento, there's high confidence that there will be a supermajority because these special elections are still in what are considered relatively safe seats. But that will still delay a supermajority from existing, you know, in the next 6 months or so in regards to any type of initiatives that might require a supermajority to pass. So this is quite significant since I think it's been 50
yeah.
plus years since there's been a supermajority.
Oh, absolutely. And Jessica, I would just like to suggest that we encourage people because the legislators When do they go home for the holiday? Are they're not out yet, right?
When I was they're not out yet. Usually the new members will also come up in December, the beginning of December.
Right.
And then I think if I remember correctly, they break. It's kind of like the last, more or less, the last 2 weeks of December, unless there's some kind of, you know, emergency.
Because I'm thinking so many districts are in school till the 21st this year. And so because they'll probably break around the 14th, it'd be a wonderful time to encourage people, particularly who have newbies,
yep,
to bring them out that week to see programs and start getting them familiar with the programs and start educating those new legislators.
I agree. This is an ideal time. A lot of members are spending a lot more time in the districts, and there's a significant number of new members in the assembly who are gonna be there for another 6 years. So it's a really good opportunity to start introducing them to the resources and infrastructure in their districts. I just wanted to note on the budget side, in addition to, you know, the additional revenue that Prop 30 is going to hopefully bring in the out years, depending on how the economy goes. Two other things worth noting was the passage of Prop 39, which is projected to bring an additional $1 billion in new revenue, which could affect, you know, on some level affect possibly the general fund and, you know, Prop 98 funds for districts. And then the LAO came out with their projections, and for better or for worse, there's only supposed to be a $1.9 billion budget deficit by June next by 2000 the next budget year, opposed to tens of billions that we've had in the past. And in 2014-15, they're predicting if everything stays on course as it is now, there could actually be a surplus. So that the budget news has been quite optimistic opposed to the last 4 or 5 years. But again, those are all projections and not could change. But it's something worth noting in regards to school financing and the state of the budget as it impacts out-of-school time programs and the resources and supports they work with.
Great.
And it's always have some positive news. And the only other thing that we noted was that the majority of school bond measures and parcel taxes passed in the state. It was more than I think had been in like the last 10 years. And so I think that can bring a lot of additional revenue to specific school districts. And we have a list if folks are interested in both the bond measures and parcel taxes. And in addition to thinking about where these are actually new revenues in some cases, for at least the parcel taxes, but also just in general that the public came out kind of in strong support for public education. So it's an important thing to continue to capitalize on and build that momentum in the coming years as we think about policy and practice and out of school time.
That's good news. I did not recognize that. That's good news.
Yeah, yeah. Exciting to see, which quite a variety of districts. And I don't know if someone, Mary Jo, I don't know if you know more about this. This came up in a meeting that I was at, but I actually don't know anything about it. The other policy issue that's come up is childcare realignment, and if that may or may not happen next year is something to monitor and watch to the extent that it affects some of the folks who do both, you know, out-of-school time and school-age childcare, depending on how the districts do it. So I'm not sure if anyone on the call has more information. It just came up in one of our meetings, but I still on my list of doing more research, but I just wanted to put it out
there. I have not heard about that, but Bruno, maybe we could get her connected with the woman on the leadership team from the Statewide Child Care Association.
Yes, Winina Beauty.
Thank you. I was spacing her name because I think she'd be an excellent resource. And I've kind of had my head buried in ACES and 21st Century this past 2 months, so I've not been a wide focus. But I think it would be a great resource for you, Jessica.
Great.
Can you
thank you.
Person's name? Her name is Nina Busey, and I will I can send out information for her to the group, to this group.
And I think Ruth from CalSAC, it takes part in a lot of those meetings too, so she might be a good resource for us, Michael, to reach out to once, you know, those discussions might start, not until the beginning of next year.
Okay.
The only other thing that a lot of folks are monitoring with the passage of Prop 30 is, student financing at the district level and looking at new formulas and bringing that back.
Yeah.
Especially for those districts with high concentration of, you know, poverty and high need students, that depending on how the policy rolls out, that could have significant impacts on a district's budget. And this is an extremely high priority for the governor from what we hear and what the papers say. So That's
yeah,
nothing.
I think starting in January, we're going to start to see a lot of action on this.
Yeah, we've heard that some really high-level meetings between the legislature and the governor's office have already started, since they're trying to, rather than do it through the budget, that it will be done through the legislative process.
Right.
So you're right. I think this is kind of will be the biggest policy issue of the year. So everyone will be weighing in on it.
Oh, yeah.
Figuratively and literally, didn't wait it for me. Those are the only things that we have been, that we were tracking with the election. I'm not sure if other folks have other things.
I don't have anything else with the election. I think you've done a great job, Jessica, really. Condensing, okay, and sharing with us what the impact is. If anybody else has anything to jump in before, I'll share some administrative policy updates from the after-school division.
Great.
Well, this is Steve Fowler. This is not a direct policy result, but the post-election analysis that political consultants and others probably are particularly following, but also candidates or future candidates, is this kind of analysis that demographics is destiny in politics, and that what some are calling the ascendant groups of voters are women, particularly younger women, younger voters in general, and communities of color. And all of those are constituencies that strongly support after-school, out-of-school time programs. And actually, if you were to look at like a gathering like Boost, you'd be looking at an audience that is primarily younger women, people of color, young people of color, particularly young as in under 35 when you talk about voters. So it's just kind of an interesting thing that our issue, our constituency, our communities that we serve and our staff are reflective of and are supported by this kind of ascendant group of voters. And in kind of positioning after school and out of school time, may be good to emphasize the ways we serve those communities, reflect those communities. Which sometimes can be education issues like English language learning, but also can be, the issues of childcare and safe places for kids between 3 and 6 and that type of thing. So it's just kind of in terms of who votes and maybe who has the margin of victory, carries the margin of victory, our issue and our constituencies are well positioned.
Well, Steve, I think the other piece that it says to us is that the time is ripe for advocacy training, mm-hmm. and taking those voters who are now emerging as carrying the votes, and really doing some advocacy and education with them about how they can use their voting power to even greater extent.
Yeah, I think that's true, and that certain organizations that maybe represent those constituencies or online networks that speak to them would be good to get them to understand, what exists in terms of existing out of school and after school, and also the opportunities to mobilize their constituencies for even more in terms
right.
of quality and quantity. I think it definitely is an opening for us. I haven't totally figured out myself how to exploit it, but you're right. There's an advocacy training, mobilizing component that could be developed.
Absolutely. Could do some cool flash mobs.
That's right.
That would relate to these constituencies, yeah.
All those constituencies, they'd be on it in 5 minutes, okay? As soon as they could get on their best foot to get there. So, absolutely.
So, Bruno, take that back to Frank. Organize flash mobs.
I am taking really good notes, and we'll be taking this back to Frank for sure. But we can do it Gangnam style, too.
So do we want to move on to after administrative policy pieces?
Sounds good.
Okay, so I just want to share that the division issued a memo about that programs now can serve a meal, and it can count as a snack as long as it has the snack nutritional requirements in it. And that is a huge piece because the Ed Code currently says the programs must serve a snack, and some districts were using that as a reason that they would not serve a meal, which obviously has more components than a snack. So programs now have the choice. They can serve a snack only. They can serve a meal only as long as it has the snack components, or they can serve a snack and a meal. So that was a huge victory, particularly for after-school providers who wanted to make sure that students left with more food in their tummies than the snack would typically provide for them, because we know for many of the students, particularly as it gets closer to the end of the month, that's the last meal they have until they come back to school in the morning and get breakfast. And the division did a good job of putting in that memo, putting out how districts could go about actually moving to a meal program if they wanted to do that. The second piece is that always around this time of year, the form comes out for the change in fiscal agent. So if a grantee wishes to change, and this is only for ACES programs. This cannot happen for 21st century programs. If they want to change in fiscal agent, that form is due in early January. This comes up, the two places where this comes up the most often are when districts have allowed cities to be their fiscal agents and operate the programs, and the districts now want to take those programs back and incorporate them as part of the district-run opportunities. And the other place where it comes up is where there's a consortium model where oftentimes it's a large county office of education that has applied on behalf of all of the school districts in a county or counties to be their grantee, and a district chooses to leave that consortium and go out on their own. So that is due, I believe, January 11th. So that is out. The third piece is that the involuntary and voluntary reductions, the work on those will start in early February. However, if a grantee does want a voluntary reduction for 13-14, they actually have to submit their paperwork in January prior to their attendance data being in. So they definitely have got to do an analysis of their attendance data earlier than they may typically do that to make a decision if they want to take a voluntary reduction, which will give them a little more cushion next year in their grant versus an involuntary reduction. And just a reminder that they are using the calendar year data again, so that this is the second year in a row that they are using calendar year data to make those decisions. And then the last piece is that the division is busy trying to fill the slots for the implementation teams of the strategic plan, and they extended the deadline date to December 7th for those applications. And I'm assuming, I don't know this for sure, but I'm assuming that was because people were busy trying to do the 21st century grants, which are due on Friday the 30th, and they didn't want to try people to have to try to also get the application process done.
Thank you so much for being on the call today. Again, this call is being recorded and will be made available along with the notes. Again, thank you so much and have a wonderful rest of your afternoon.